Good morning, everyone. This is about lossy compression, onboard lossy compression on a satellite for hyperspectral and ultraspectral images. That's a joint work with Andrea Braudo and Mauro Barni of the University of Siena. So I'll first give some motivation about onboard lossy compression and the associated specific problems. I will describe the proposed compression algorithm, then provide some experimental results on hyperspectral and ultraspectral images, and finally draw some conclusions. Hyperspectral images are a collection of pictures taken at several different wavelengths of the same scene. It's quite a lot of data, but when it comes to compressing those data on board a satellite, we're faced with the problem that we don't have many computational resources to actually do the compression. So first thing that we need is some low complexity algorithm. That's quite different from compression on the ground for archival purposes. And the second very important thing is that, unlike typical consumer digital cameras where there is a two-dimensional detector array to take the picture, for hyperspectral images we just have a single one-dimensional array that takes one line of the image with all its spectral channels, all the different wavelengths, and the other lines of the images of the image are formed by the motion of the aircraft or satellite, so they are taken at successive times. So what this entails is that when we do the compression, we don't have the whole image available, but just a few lines of the image with all the spectral channels. So we need to do the compression using low buffering requirements. So, but still, we want to compress as good as we can, so we want to have state-of-the-art compression efficiency. And for hyperspectral applications, we need to cover a range of bit rates, which is relatively large, typically from around 0.5 to 3 or 4 bits per pixel. That should be compared with a sensor bit depth is typically between 12 and 16 bits per second. So we have to cover low bitrate and high bitrate compression. And finally, we need some error containment. Those compressed data packets are downlinked using a communication channel, which is subject to occasional packet losses, and we don't want that a single packet loss disrupts the reconstruction of the whole image. So there are several available algorithms for performing compression of three-dimensional images like hyperspectral or ultraspectral images. The most popular approach uses three-dimensional transform coding, for example, JPEG 2000 with part 2 that supports a multi-component transformation where you can use either a spectral wavelet transform or an arbitrary spectral transformation, and then you apply JPEG 2000 on each of the transformed spectral channels. So we can use wavelets, we can use the Karun and Loewe transforms, whatever. This works very well at low bit rates, but the problem of this approach is the high complexity. Complexity comes from the transform, but even more from the coding and ray distortion optimization in JPEG 2000, where you have to do the arithmetic coding of all bit planes and then the post-compression ray distortion optimization. So that's much too complex for onboard compression, although it does work well for archival purposes. And the second thing is that if we want to use JPEG 2000, well then for onboard compression we don't have the whole image available. So our spatial transformations, we have just to take them on a few lines of the image at a time, which is definitely possible with JPEG 2000 using the line-based transformation. But then the ray distortion optimization cannot be done in a global way anymore. It has to be done in a local way, just a few lines at a time, and there's a big performance penalty for that as opposed to the globally optimal ray distortion optimization. So the other possible approach is to use prediction techniques using three-dimensional spatial and spectral prediction. Prediction has been used for a lot of time for near lossless compression. Near lossless compression is typically for high quality applications where you want the maximum absolute error between the decoding and original image to be bounded by a user selected value. So that works very well at high bit rates, but it doesn't work quite as well at the low bit rates. And then three-dimensional prediction is usually coupled with scalar quantization and Huffman-like entropy coding. And with a Huffman coder, we don't go below 1 bit per pixel because the shortest code word that a Huffman code can provide is just 1 bit. So that's a problem if we want to go below 1 bit per pixel. So what we propose for onboard compression is based on a prediction approach where we use a three-dimensional spatial and spectral predictor, which gives us the low complexity that we need to do the compression. But then we're faced with the problem of improving performance at the low bit rates because existing schemes just don't do that. So what we do in our algorithm is, since we don't really need to perform near lossless compression, we move to truly lossy compression of the prediction residuals. And so in order to do that, we improve on the quantization stage. We don't use a simple scalar uniform quantizer, and we add ray distortion optimization to the whole scheme. So this is how we do it. The prediction stage that we use performs the prediction independently on 16 by 16 blocks of samples. So this picture shows an image divided in four 16 by 16 blocks. And for every block, we look at all the spectral channels and the co-located blocks in the different spectral channels. So we're looking over the wavelength dimension. And we predict one block from the co-located decoded block in the previous spectral channel. So this is quite different from the kind of prediction that is usually employed in hyperspectral image compression, which is a pixel by pixel and not a block by block prediction. But as we will see, this allows us to do a very efficient ray distortion optimization. So essentially what we do is, there are more details in the next slide, but we calculate a linear predictor that uses the previous block to predict the current block, and then we calculate the prediction residual. And the nice thing about this is that it provides spatial error containment in that if some compressed square block is lost during the transmission, that will only affect the next blocks in the block in the same spatial position in the next wavelengths, but it will not affect any other spatial blocks in the image. So the prediction is actually quite simple. We call X the vector of samples of the current 16 by 16 block in lexicographic ordering, and R the vector of samples of the reference block, which is, as I said, the previous co-located decoded block in the previous spectral channel. And then we calculate a least mean square predictor, which is defined by two parameters, alpha and M. M is the mean value of the current block, and alpha is the least mean square parameter that predicts the current block from the previous block. All right. So the first of the things that we're doing to move from near lossless to lossy compression is quantization. Typical near lossless compression employs scalar uniform quantization, which is almost optimal at high bit rates, but far from optimal at low bit rates. So for low bit rate compression, it's customary to use quantization with dead zone, which creates long sequences of zeros that are compacted very effectively by entropy coders. This is near optimal at low rates, but not at high rates. And to find something that works well at all rates, we decided to use a kind of quantizer which is called uniform threshold quantizer, or UTQ, which is slightly more complex than a scalar uniform quantizer even with dead zone, but it's near optimal at all bit rates. The idea of UTQ is actually very simple. It's a scalar quantizer in which all the intervals, quantization intervals, are of the same size. So calculating the code word is done in much the same way as a classical scalar uniform quantizer. The difference lies in the fact that the reconstruction value is not taken as the midpoint of the quantization interval, but rather the centroid of the quantization interval. So since we're applying this to the prediction residuals, we make the assumption that the prediction residuals follow a two-sided exponentially decreasing distribution, Laplacian distribution. And so we calculate the actual reconstruction values as a centroid using this distribution. And what happens is that if you look at this picture, so what you can see here are the different quantization intervals. The green dots are the midpoint of every interval. That would be the reconstruction output by a scalar uniform quantizer. But since we use this, we make this assumption of the distribution, it turns out that the low values of the prediction error are more likely than the high values. So what we do is we add a correction term to the reconstruction that accounts for that. So that biases the reconstruction towards the low values. So much so as the quantization index is low, so close to zero. So that's the first departure from near lossless compression. And the second and possibly most important one is ray distortion optimization. And this is where it really helps to use square blocks for the prediction. So the idea here is essentially similar to the skip mode in video compression. Sometimes we find certain 16 by 16 blocks that can be predicted really very well from the reference block. And in that case, we don't encode the prediction error. So we rather skip the encoding of the prediction error so that we save a lot of bits in the process and we just signal to the decoder that the decoded signal in this case will be just a predictor that the decoder can calculate. So in particular, we actually do a prediction. We calculate the variance of the prediction error, D, and we compare this variance with the threshold. And if D exceeds the threshold, then it means that the predictor is not good enough for skipping the current block. So we do the classical encoding of the prediction error. And otherwise, if the D is below the threshold, we simply write the two prediction parameters for the block to the file, but no prediction error samples, so that the decoder will be able to read the prediction parameter from the file, calculate the predictor, and will use the predictor as decoded value. Entropy coding of the prediction residuals is done using Golem power of two codes. This is a very typical thing in compression for satellite imaging, because Golem power of two codes are much simpler than any other code, especially arithmetic code. So they're not quite as powerful, but that's a very good compromise between performance and complexity. And we calculate the best coding parameter for every sample based on the accumulating magnitude of unmapped prediction residual over a window of 32 past samples. So it's not done on a block-by-block basis, but on a sample-by-sample basis. All right, so here are some results for the proposed algorithm. We've tried that on several different images. I'll show results for images from two different data sets. One is AVIRIS. AVIRIS is an imaging spectrometer flown, which is flown on an aircraft. And these images are, they have 224 spectral channels, and the spatial size is 680 times 512 images. And these are really the raw images as are acquired by the sensor. They have no calibration whatsoever, no corrections and nothing. It's really the image as it's taken by the sensor. AVIRIS is used for several classification applications and image analysis applications. And the second image is an AIRS image from the AIRS sounder, which is operated by the NASA, which is used for atmospherical studies. These images have very much less pixels spatially, just 135 times 90 pixels, but they have a lot of spectral channels, you know, 1501 spectral channels. As a quality metric, we look at the peak signal-to-noise ratio, and we compare the performance of the proposed algorithm with two other algorithms. One is JPEG 2000 Part 2 with a spectral discrete wavelet transformation. And in this case, we do perform the three-dimensional full ray distortion optimization. We're not doing any line-based transform. So the results that I'll be showing for JPEG 2000 are kind of unrealistic, and one wouldn't be able to actually run that on a satellite. But it's a sort of upper bound of the performance of JPEG 2000. And the second algorithm is near lossless compression, using exactly the same predictor and entropy coder, but not using the UTQ quantizer nor the ray distortion optimization. So it's just a predictor followed by a DPCM loop with a scalar uniform quantization and entropy coding of the prediction residuals. So these are the results. The blue curve here is JPEG 2000 Part 2 with a wavelet transformation. And looking at the near lossless compression algorithm, as is known, near lossless compression is better than transform coding at high bit rates, and you can see that here, where the performance difference with respect to JPEG 2000 is pretty large, over 2 bits per sample. But at low bit rates, this is not quite as good, for essentially for two reasons. One is related to the fact that the larger the quantization step size, and the worse is the quality of the reference signal for the prediction. So this biases, this brings the performance down at low bit rates. But then this algorithm is not able to achieve bit rates below 1 bit per pixel because we're using a Golem code whose minimum code word length is 1 bit. So there's just no way to go below that. The proposed algorithm seems to bring the best of both worlds here. It's better than JPEG 2000 at all bit rates larger than like 0.3 or 0.35 bits per sample. So even at low bit rates, the ray distortion optimization works pretty nicely here. And its performance tends to the performance of near lossless compression at high bit rates. And that's reasonable because at high bit rates, the ray distortion optimization will never select the skip mode for any block in the image, and the uniform threshold quantizer tends to a scalar quantizer, essentially. So the two algorithms essentially become pretty much the same. We have similar results for the AIRS image. So for AIRS, JPEG 2000 does a little bit better. It sometimes outperforms by a small margin the proposed algorithm. Sometimes it's not quite as good. Essentially, it's comparable performance, and that's pretty much the same here. So near lossless compression is not quite as good at low bit rates. It's become pretty good at high bit rates. So this is still in line with JPEG 2000 for this image, but JPEG 2000 here, let me recall, is using the full three-dimensional ray distortion optimization. So if we use the line-based transform, it would not be quite as good. So, all right. So this is an example of visual quality, and this is just essentially goes to show that we, although we're using a block-based predictor, we don't have any blocking artifacts here. So this is a patch from one band of Everest, the original signal. And this is the reconstructed signal by the proposed algorithm at 0.14 bit per pixel. This is, you know, one of the lowest bit rates that the algorithm can achieve. And as can be seen, there are indeed artifacts, but no blocking artifacts whatsoever. And the reason is that the blocking artifacts come from the quantization in the transform domain, so from the coupling of quantization and inverse transformation. Whereas in this case, we're using a block-based predictor, but the quantization is done independently on the signal sample, so it doesn't create any blocking artifacts. So this is what would happen with JPEG, for example, which creates, you know, blockiness here, which essentially kills the texture of the image. All right? So in conclusion, what we have proposed is essentially a new model for compression of hyperspectral images where we achieve low complexity by using a prediction-based approach which performs as good as or better than the state-of-the-art three-dimensional transform coding with fully featured ray distortion optimization. So that seems to be a nice way forward for onboard compression of satellite images with complexity and memory requirements that are significantly lower than JPEG 2000. Now, it's difficult to compare the complexity of different algorithms, but I talked to scientists working on JPEG 2000, and it seems like the proposed approach would be like an order of magnitude fewer operations than JPEG 2000 for roughly the same complexity on these kind of images. There is still room for improvement. We're not using any block or arithmetic coding, but that would certainly help. The coding efficiency of arithmetic coding would boost our performance by some margin. We might use optimal band ordering, that is, using for reference spectral channel for the prediction, not just the previous spectral channel, but the spectral channel that is more correlated with the current channel. So this, especially on IRS, that provides a very nice performance improvement. This algorithm has been proposed to the European Space Agency and is under evaluation for the spectral imager that is carried on the ESA ExoMars rover that is going to fly to Mars in a few years from now. And that concludes my presentation.
Do we have any questions?
Can you make any comment in regards to how the compression technique might affect processing that would occur after the image is transmitted, for example, either end member extraction or some sort of classification task?
Yeah. That's something that when you propose lossy compression to the remote sensing guys, they're really scared about the potential negative effects of lossy compression. So we have done experiments in the past with that, and my feeling is that if the mean square error, so you have several quality metrics that you can use to measure that, not just mean square error. You can take maximum error, spectral angle, and a lot of other metrics. But my experience with that is if the mean square error is low enough, is small enough, then everything will work very nicely. And for these kind of missions, you definitely want to keep the mean square error sufficiently small. Not for hyperspectral images, but for multispectral, several existing systems actually use lossy compression. Spot 5 does use lossy compression at a bit rate of, I think, around 3 bit per pixel from 8. And the Iconos satellite uses lossy compression. So the government agencies, which are using public funding, they don't really care a lot about lossy compression, but the people, the private companies, they do care a lot. So my feeling is that compression is not a big deal, with exceptions, obviously, if the mean square error is small enough. One problem comes, for example, from applications like anomaly detection, where large errors on one single pixel can actually bias the result of anomaly detection. So one has to be careful in some ways. But for classification, my feeling is that it more or less goes with the mean square error if the mean square error is low enough.
We have time for one more question. Quick. Okay, let's thank our speaker.